I'm Valerie Jemison. This is number 0323, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Older, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0323. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actor Mark Ryan, whose latest role is as a Russian mobster in the movie Street. He has certainly played his share of gangsters and outlaws.
We're nice people, you know. I've had one of those careers. I've been a merry man, an honorary knight of the round table. I've been a pirate quartermaster, several giant alien transforming robots, Che Guevara, you know, and now I'm a Russian gangster. What can I tell you?
Former flight attendant Wendy Connect, author of Life, Love, and a Hijacking, My Pan Am Memoir. We actually caught up with her while she was at a Pan Am convention.
Ex-Pan Am flight attendants, and what an amazing group of people from all over the world. It's really fascinating from the 60s onward until Pan Am went out of business in 1991. Trying to keep the brand alive.
Stuart Nolman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman, and this time Book Banter takes a peek at how Playboy magazine became an entertainment phenomenon and social catalyst in Playboy swings. So get ready to go back in time to 1960, enjoy some hot times and cool jazz with us later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0323 was real estate agent Valerie Jemison from Equipe Francoeur Jemison at Group McKay. And you can check out their website at equipefrancoeurjemison.com. And of course, you'll find the link in this week's edition of the Stuff File program on the What's On page. And if you're trying to find the What's On page, just look for this show number, which you just heard Valerie say. Oh, it's just a vicious circle, isn't it? Yes. Thank you very much, Valerie, for doing the guest slate on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, you hear a lot about how unmotivated young people are these days, wasting their time with video games and social media until they find themselves at 30 years old, still living in their mother's basements with no skills and no careers. But one teenage boy in Washington showed what he could do with a little ambition and his mother's basement. 15-year-old Deontay Hunter ran a successful business out of his mother's house with his older brother, Thyshawn. So successful, in fact, that the boys were able to cut their mother in for 25% of the profits. The only problem is that the business they were running was a prostitution ring, an underage prostitution ring. The young brothers were doing pretty well until the 17-year-old was arrested in connection with a shooting. If it weren't for that pesky shooting, After the older Thyshawn Hunter was arrested, officers tapped the phones at the Spokane County Juvenile Detention Center and heard conversations between the 15-year-old boy and his jailed 17-year-old brother about their little enterprise. Deontay Hunter was arrested on charges including promoting prostitution of minors, promoting commercial sex abuse of a minor, possessing sexually explicit photos of minors, and first-degree burglary. But to add a touch of sentiment to this sordid tale, the mother of the boys allegedly did save her share of the profits to post bail for her 17-year-old. There's nothing like the love of a proud mother, huh? It also helps that she saved her pimping profits. Yee. Moving right along, a Wild West gunfight reenactment in Tombstone, Arizona got a little too realistic when a performer fired off a live round that struck another actor. The Cochise County Sheriff's Office said the Tombstone Vigilantes gunfight reenactment group was putting on a street performance Sunday when group member Tom Carter fired off a live round that struck Ken Curtis in the upper groin area. Seriously, do we need to define the groin region where the bullet hit? I mean, whether it's upper or lower, it's still the groin, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, investigators said Carter had arrived late for the event and his gun was not inspected to make sure it was loaded with blanks. The sheriff's office said they examined Carter's gun and determined he had fired off 5 live rounds during the performance. A woman standing in front of the Birdcage Theater during the reenactment was injured by shrapnel from one of Carter's shots, but she declined medical treatment. Curtis was taken to Banner University Medical Center for surgery to remove the bullet. The Tombstone Vigilantes were ordered by the town's mayor to cease performances until it could be verified that only blank ammunition would be used during the reenactments. You think that would go without saying, don't you? So apparently, we also now need blank gun control. Police in Michigan say it wasn't hard to recognize a drunken burglary suspect a few blocks away from the crime as she was covered in cake and frosting. Alpena police said officers responded Sunday to a home where a resident reported finding an unknown woman making a commotion in their kitchen. The homeowner said the woman had knocked over or broken several items, including a tray of cupcakes. Alpena police and Michigan State Police searched the area and discovered the suspect a few blocks away from the home covered in cake and frosting. The police report said the woman was highly intoxicated and had cupcake frosting and cake all over her torso and legs. The suspect, whose name was not released, was arrested and charged with unlawful entry and malicious destruction of property. She was taken to the county jail. All over her torso and legs, you say? Just exactly what was she doing with the cake and frosting? Do we really want to know? Anyway, let's get to our last story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest, shall we? Police in Minnesota arrested a woman accused of sending anonymous threats to a neighbor family saying she wanted to taste their delicious children. Champlin police said 38-year-old Carrie Pernula was arrested after an investigation into anonymous threats received by a family living in her neighborhood. The first note received by the family on September 27th was addressed to Sir or Madam and said simply, "The children look delicious. May I have a taste?" The children's mother posted a picture of the letter in a Champlin community Facebook group. The parents said they soon started receiving magazine subscriptions addressed to Your Tasty Children. Police said they tracked the magazine subscriptions back to Carrie, who admitted to sending the mail. Said Champlin Detective or Deputy Police Chief Ty Schmidt, "She was angry because the kids were leaving things in her yard, and I think being a little noisy, being kids, the way kids are." Police said the Champlin City Attorney is reviewing the case for potential charges of gross misdemeanor terroristic threats and stalking. You know, if they had charges like terroristic threats and stalking back in the old days, half of those old ladies in nursery rhymes and fairy tales would have been behind bars much earlier in their lives, don't you think? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Mark Ryan is one of the stars of the movie Street, which has been described as Rocky meets MMA on screen. In it, he plays a Russian gangster. People might also know Mark as the voice of several robots in the highly successful Transformer movie franchise. And if you watch Black Sails, you might know him as Mr. Gates. That's just some of the work he's done. He's very busy, but he's taken some time to talk to us today. He joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Peter. How are you? Good morning. How's life in Montreal?
Life is great. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Not a problem. It's one of my favorite cities in the world.
Okay. You know, I've had the opportunity over the years to talk to a lot of actors who often play villainous or dark characters, and I find that in most cases, they are the nicest people to chat with.
We're nice people, you know. I've had one of those careers. I've been a merry man, an honorary knight of the round table. I've been a pirate quartermaster, several giant alien transforming robots, Che Guevara, you know, and now I'm a Russian gangster. What can I tell you, you know?
What was it like? You have to develop, obviously, we can tell from your accent that you are from the UK, but you get to, in the course of your career, play various roles in different accents. Now you're playing a Russian. How much work goes into just perfecting the accent?
Well, it's an interesting process, actually. I started out in the music business in the West End as a singer. I played McGowdy in Evita, in the original cast of Evita, then I played Shay. So the beginning of my career, in fact, the first 10 years probably of my career was singing in West End musicals or touring in opera or doing various other things. And I think that musicality and that being able to listen to a tune or to listen to something else helps you with the ability to tune into the rhythm and the sense of an accent and the flavor of an accent. And for this one, I spent some time in the military, so I knew some Russian, and I certainly knew about the different pronunciations, the phonetic way of saying things. But I studied, one of the films I studied was a film called Eastern Promises. And in that, Viggo Mortensen does an amazing, amazing Russian accent. And the background to it, all of how he got the mannerisms and the physicality of it. There's a great side part of the video where he talks about how into what depth he went. I studied that and listened to the way he spoke, and sort of, I have to say, you know, if you're going to steal from the best. So I copied Viggo Mortensen's path down into how to play a Russian gangster, and it worked quite well. So
excellent. Now you mentioned just briefly a moment ago that you were at one time in the military. You've also written a book. Co-authored a book which came out, I believe, in June online.
I've written actually three books. I've written two books about the psychology and the history of the imagery in tarot cards.
Right, right.
And Greenwood was the first one, which was kind of a bit of a groundbreaker and was a cult success. And then Wildwood is probably one of the best-selling tarot decks ever, which I did with John Matthews, and an artist called Will Worthington. And then this year, in fact, and later on this year, there'll be Hold Fast, which is my biography about my mad life in Los Angeles over the last 20 years. Yeah, so there's actually about three out there somewhere. And there's going to be a fourth one, so, you know.
And in telling your story, it seems like you have a far more interesting life than perhaps any character you've played.
You know, I've been very fortunate. You know, and I've never had a closed mind to opportunity. And I think that's probably one of the philosophies that comes out in the books is that, you know, I do believe that you create your own reality. So you kind of, I've always looked at opportunities, and even if it's a door closing, another door opens, and I've always been willing to step down the path and just find out what's down that road. And so that has taken me into some very interesting, strange, and sometimes dark places, but the experiences have enriched my life, my awareness, my perception, however you want to see it. But it's all about traveling with an open mind and an open heart.
Okay, so as I mentioned, your career started in the UK as an actor, and you have a very illustrious career. And people, I forgot to mention Robin Hood too. People might remember that as well, which was a show that started, I believe, in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and okay. The bizarre thing about that, Peter, is that some guys back in the United Kingdom, Barnaby Eaton Jones and a couple of guys from a company called Baffle Gab, actually have just raised on a fundraising, crowdfunding thing. They wanted to record the album or the audio tape of the last script that we never actually completed. We never finished this show called The Knights of the Apocalypse, which was going to be the last show that we did. And their goal was to raise £10,000 so that it could cover all the expenses of recording this and putting it out for the fans. And they raised that in one night. And right now, as I look at this, they've raised £26,517, which is about getting on for $36,000 or $37,000.
Excellent, excellent. Well, the reason why I brought up, you know, the breadth of your career is that you have a career that started in the UK. You are also known now, obviously, around the world, thanks to things like the Transformers, and you work in the United States. Is there a difference as an actor when you literally cross the pond, and how it's perceived, not necessarily with the general population, but within the industry itself?
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting question, Peter. I don't want to be controversial. When I came here 20 years ago, I'd done a lot of West End shows. I'd done, you know, a hit TV show like Robin. I'd done many other guests and recurrings on various other shows. And I'd just done a film called Nil by Mouth, and Gary Oldman directed it. And in those days, when you went in for a job, you usually sat down with the director. Up until a few years ago, in fact, when I went in for Prestige, you sit down with Christopher Nolan, you know. And nowadays, it's all, everybody's taping and sending stuff off into this great big black hole, and you never hear anything back. But I was told, and I this is how I basically approached it. I was told, forget all of that, because none of that means anything here in Los Angeles. Nobody cares. What they want to know is getting some shows under your belt here. And so I literally almost took all of that history out of my head, put it to one side, and started again from scratch with a new approach and a new, you know, technical way of dealing with the audition process and the meeting process. So I basically had to start again after 20 years in London. I had to start here again from scratch 20 years ago. So it's a very different business. And one of the things that I was in New York recently, and I met some agents there, which I've since, you know, gone with. And one of the guys in the room, a very nice fellow, he said to me, he said, you played McGowdy and Shea in the original cast of Evita, right? I said, yes. I said, I'm the only man that Harold Prince, the Broadway legend, let play for McGowdy. Then 2 weeks later, I was playing Shea Guevara, the only guy that stepped from two characters within the show. And he said, that is theatrical legend here, you know, obviously, and Harold Prince is a theatrical. I said, I know. I said, it doesn't buy me anything in Los Angeles at all. He said, it does here. He said, we know about that stuff here. I said, well, they don't in LA, trust me. It doesn't matter. They don't. It doesn't count. You're starting from scratch.
And the other thing, too, is there's a mindset for both actors and, more importantly, agents in the UK versus the United States. In the UK, you could do something on the in the West End. You could do a television show. You could do a movie, and it's no big deal. It's all acting. Whereas you sometimes get pigeonholed in the United States, either you're a television actor or a film actor or a theatrical actor. That's changing a little bit nowadays, but still there are some definite independent roads there.
Yeah. Yes, there are. And I mean, this is one of the things when people say to me, wow, you've written, you've been a sword master, you've choreographed fights, you've done stage, theatre, opera, you know. Yes, because in the UK, you can. And people don't see that as necessarily being a bad thing. Here, you are much more likely to get pigeonholed into being a character actor, or you play this certain type or that certain type. And also is the age thing. I mean, if you look at Helen Mirren, we have a slew of more mature women stars who still are the sexiest women in the business. I mean, again, Helen Mirren is one of the best examples. Where here, that I feel sorry sometimes for the girls here, because it's a tougher sell.
Absolutely. Well, you have just a few more minutes. I got to talk a little bit about Yuri. I mentioned you play this Russian gangster in the movie Street. In this movie, you play a Russian gangster who owns a fighting gym. Tell us a little bit about the character you play.
Well, it's interesting, and I don't want to give the plot away, because although he's, you know, a kind of a scary guy, like all bad guys, there's a motivation behind the character. You have to find what motivates even a bad guy, that, you know, to give him depth, to give him understanding, and why he's like he is, and where the human side of the bad guy is. Just being evil is, you know, is pretty boring. So you have to find the colors within this character that gives him a human side. And at the end of the day, although what he does is kind of tricky and cunning and devious, he's kind of like a gangster with a heart of gold. And I don't want to give the plot of the film away, but it was a great fun part to play, because I got to chew the furniture and the scenery and be the bad guy. But also Bradford Mays, the director, allowed me to flesh him out a little bit more. You know, to make him human, so you could see it wasn't just about being the fighting bad guy. The guy had a genuine affection for people, and even some pity for people. And I was able to play that out. And I think it helps fatten out the character, round out the internal motivations of the character.
And when you're playing a bad guy, you have to get into the character and find out what makes that person tick. And 'cause from their perspective, they're not bad, right?
No, exactly. They're not bad. They're living in a bad world. You know, they're living in a shark tank. So they have to be as smart and as fast and as dangerous as the rest of the sharks in the tank. And, you know, some of these guys that we had in the Frank Trigg, I mean, these guys, or Matt Matrioni, I mean, these guys are all worlds. We have some of the best, Uriah Hall. We have some of the best fighters, MMA fighters in the business. And you should see some of these guys. I mean, John Hennigan, these guys are all professional MMA fighters and with world championship records. And so, you know, I've been playing this bad guy and I'm surrounded by these monsters that could break you in half, you know. So I was like, you know, at one time I did say, come on, I'll take you out in the car park and parking lot and just show you a few moves. I mean, no, it's all right. Don't worry. You're doing fine on your own. No, they've broken me in half. And these guys are big, fit, dangerous, fast people. And that's the world this gangster lives in. And so he's not perceiving it that he's a bad guy. He's perceiving it as a business, and it's just a business, and that's what it is.
The movie is called Street, and I will go back to what I said when we first started talking, and talking to people who have played villains in films are often the nicest people on the planet. Mark, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, thank you very much. Give my love to Montreal, as I've worked there a couple of times, one of my favorite cities, so I hope the weather's treating you well.
Actor Mark Ryan, one of the stars of the movie Street. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0323, and you'll find links to Mark's website and the website for the movie Street.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about eating your way around the world with a former flight attendant. Plus, Stuart Nolman is in with another edition of Book Banter. And of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. And lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to listen to radio. Well, surveillance video in a Boost mobile phone store in Los Angeles, California, shows a man entering through an air conditioning duct. The burglar's unconventional entrance triggered an alarm, according to owner Miguel Ceja. Unfortunately for the man, the business was not yet open and wasn't stocked with any merchandise. Apparently realizing this, the man on the video ran out through a door into a secure hallway with no exits that could be opened from the hallway. When that door shuts, you're done, Ceja said. "You're not getting out of there." Seha and his partners built the secure area after they had lost thousands of dollars of inventory in previous burglaries. In the video, the man could be seen kicking the reinforced steel doors and even trying to break through with a hammer. He continued to try to escape for about 45 minutes until the police arrived and took him into custody. Gee, if only he had, oh, I don't know, a cell phone to call for help. Yeah. By the way, what took the police 45 minutes to arrive at the sound of an alarm? That's what I'd like to know. Meanwhile, in October, a Harvard University debate team, three-time recent champions, by the way, of the American Parliamentary Debate Association, lost a match to a team of prisoners from the maximum security Eastern New York Correctional Facility. Prison debaters are held to the exact same standards as college debate teams, according to the director of Bard College's Prison Initiative, which coaches the inmates. Prisoners took the pro side of public schools having the right to turn away students whose parents had entered the U.S. illegally, though team members personally disagreed. The Bard trainers pointed out that the inmates perfected their presentation despite, or perhaps because of, the prison's prohibition on internet access. I'm wondering, what are the chances years from now that members of the Harvard debate team will become lawyers and they'll end up representing the inmates they lost to in the debate? For the inmates' sake, I hope the Harvard crew doesn't hold a grudge. Yeah. A black alleged gang member, 19-year-old Torres Brown, under arrest in Clearwater, Florida in September for having a marijuana cigarette casually tucked behind his ear as he talked politely to a white police officer, tried to flee on foot but was quickly taken down. Asked why he ran, Brown replied, according to the police report, "I don't like white people touching me. White people do weird stuff." Yes, yes. White people occasionally do weird stuff, but you had a marijuana cigarette behind your ear while talking to a cop. I believe they call that in football offsetting penalties, you moron. And according to the Washington Post, the Merit Systems Protection Board is a personal court of last resort for federal employees unfairly punished by demotion or firing, which is just what employee Timothy Korb needed when his federal agency suspended him back in 2013, allegedly for revealing at a staff meeting that the agency's actual case backlog was much worse than it was letting on. Korb's employer, ironically, is the Merit System Protection Board. And in September of this year, an administrative judge upheld his claim of unfairness. Clearly, the Merit Systems Protection Board is unclear on the concept of its very own existence. A suburban Houston school district police officer who pulled over a female motorist and then asked to lick her feet has been sentenced to 1 year in jail. Patrick Quinn, a 27-year-old former Cypress Fairbanks school district police officer, pleaded guilty to official oppression. He was sentenced in Houston. According to court documents, Quinn stopped the woman in August 2014 and found marijuana paraphernalia, but told her that he had a foot fetish and would release her if she let him lick her feet or give him her underwear. Investigators say he then changed his mind and let her go. Well, that's just plain creepy, isn't it? It will be interesting to meet his new friends for that 1 year that he spends in jail, by the way. Yeah, especially when they find out why he's in there and what he did for a living before. Could be interesting. Meanwhile, an off-duty Maryland police officer charged with biting a man's testicles. Let me repeat that sentence, because you might not have heard that clearly. An off-duty Maryland police officer charged with biting a man's testicles during a fight is no longer working for the department. Police officer Michael Flagg, age 31, of Anne Arundel County, left the department for unspecified reasons on September 25th, according to spokeswoman Jacqueline Davis, saying that it was a personal issue. I'm guessing that issue is a nut allergy. Anyway, Flagg was arrested on May 5th after he allegedly bit a man on his testicles during a fight outside a Baltimore bar, according to court records. Flagg said the victim made unwanted advances on his female roommate. Flagg was charged with misdemeanor second-degree assault, public intoxication, and endangering the victim's safety, according to the police. He is serving 1 year of probation after being convicted of public intoxication and endangering the safety of another person. Every guy who listened to this story, by the way, has crossed their legs. Hopefully, you weren't driving while I was mentioning this story. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, officially declaring oneself not subject to the laws of any jurisdiction, i.e., a sovereign, opens a wide range of career choices. The FBI and Las Vegas police say that in Rick Van Thiel's case, once his porn industry career ended because someone stole his video equipment, he decided to go into the medical field, becoming Dr. Rick, with expertise performing dozens of abortions, circumcisions, and castrations, plus cancer treatments and root canals. Wow. Proudly avoiding actual licensing, Van Thiel promoted alternative remedies with an office in a Nevada compound of trailers that one hesitant patient described as something out of a horror movie. Van Thiel, arrested in October, nonetheless staunchly defended his ability, acquired, he said, by watching YouTube medical videos. Wow. Bonus entertainment, by the way. In court, he will be acting as his own lawyer. No doubt stuff he learned from more YouTube videos. This is a guy who has a window seat in first class on the delusional train. Yikes. Yikes, 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 yikes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Wendy Connect is a world traveler. The former international flight attendant is the author of Life, Love, and a Hijacking, My Pan Am Memoir. She's on the program to talk about eating your way around the world. And Wendy is on the line with us right now from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, Peter. Great to talk to you.
Nice to have you on the program. Now, you're actually in Savannah for a gathering of Pan Am employees past and present.
It's ex-Pan Am flight attendants, and what an amazing group of people who are from all over the world. It's really fascinating from the 60s onward until Pan Am went out of business in 1991. Yeah. Trying to keep the brand alive.
Excellent. Now, as I mentioned, the headline of your book, I want to talk about food, but the title, I mean, Life, Love, and a Hijacking, I have to stop at the word hijacking because that's just there. What's the story about the hijacking?
Well, that happened in the hijacking I'm referring to is 1986, Karachi, Flight 73. I went to India to train Indian flight attendants, and long story is in the book, but I ended up being on the flight that I went back on a flight that was hijacked on the way out, and all the people that I had trained were part of this group of flight attendants, and I got very involved with the recovery and with our chief purser, who was unfortunately killed in the hijacking that Bollywood is now doing a movie about. So it's just been an amazing journey that 30 years later, the hijacking, I'm writing about the hijacking, and now Bollywood's doing this movie.
You were mentioning the flight was filled with people that you were training?
All the crew members were people I trained, every single one of them.
Wow.
And they had been, they were new hires. So it was just a fascinating experience. I lived in India and got very involved with its whole incident. And, that's in the book, that's the sobering part of the book, but the rest of the book is pretty funny, I hope.
Yeah, so people can go into the book and find out more information about that. Again, the book is Life, Love, and a Hijacking, My Pan Am Memoir. But as I said, I wanted to talk to you about food, because I got to admit, I'm one of the world's most picky eaters. I got to say that right off the bat.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yes. I'm a really, really picky eater. I'm really finicky. So having said that, I mean, you're somebody who's traveled the world. You've had to literally travel on the fly. So what are some of the tips you have that you suggest when it comes to people, when it comes to traveling and their diet?
Well, I have to say that the best part, to me, and I'm a sort of a picky eater too, but you've got to be adventurous when you travel. because, you know, you're going to lose out on so much of the fun and the all the heritage. And, you know, I mean, people are so proud of their culture, and that's so, and food is such a part of it. So you miss a lot of the experience if you don't experience the local food culture. So I just say, you know, even though you might not think about eating something at home, try to be open-minded, you know? I mean, what's your favorite food?
My favorite food? Well, I'm definitely a meat and potatoes kind of guy, so let's just go with steak, for instance.
Okay, so Kobe beef. You got, you know, if you go to Japan, you got to try Kobe beef, right? You wouldn't think of not doing that.
I would not think of not doing that, absolutely.
Exactly. So you're going to find something that's going to appeal to you. But, I mean, you know, it's so much fun. Like, you know, think about caprese. Have you ever had a caprese salad?
No.
You know, oh, come on, Peter. Well, it's the mozzarella, tomato, and basil. Very basic.
And anybody who knows me knows that I'm truly, when I say meat and potatoes, I am meat and potatoes. When it comes
When
it comes to salad, as I tell people in restaurants, would you like the salad, sir? And I say, I'm sorry, I don't graze.
Okay, well, maybe you could be a little open-minded, but seriously, like, you know, like where things originate. Okay, how about this? You've got to like pizza. The whole world loves pizza, right?
Yes.
So, having pizza in Italy, wouldn't that be incredible?
Yes, it would, actually.
Yeah, and you know, that's what's so much fun is to discover, like, Italians interpret pizza different than Americans do. So it's fun to, you know the note of the differences. And I just think, you know, eating is, you know, I don't know if you're a meat and potatoes guy. I don't know, but for me, I like variety. And so, you know, what better way to experience variety than, you know, kind of eating your way around the world.
Now, I'm assuming, too, because one of the concerns that some people have, is, especially as they get older, is that maybe their constitution can't take something new. They're always worried, especially if you're going on vacation, that, you know, you spend a couple of hours at a nice restaurant and then several days in the bathroom. You know? So that's the fear a lot of people have when they do travel.
Well, okay, then I do have a couple caveats, and I have some issues. I don't like real greasy food, and I mean, I have been in some hairy positions where, you know, things haven't really gone as planned, like choking on a fishbone at a karaoke bar in Seoul, or, you know, having to eat something that you have no idea what it is in Bhutan, things like that. But I will say this, you know, within reason, you got to be careful. You're not going to eat at a food stall in India. You know, when you know that the sanitary conditions aren't that good, you have to be careful. Eat at great hotels. Eat at places that are known, and be careful. But beyond that, you know, there's only so much that you can control. But I will say that, you know, caution. You know, be cautious, but, you know, don't let that stop you from enjoying your experience, let it hinder you too much. But one other thing I have to say is that a little tip, if you don't mind, if you really, like your hosts, want to feed you something that you just can't even stand the thought of, like blood sausage or something like that, just tell them you're vegan.
Okay.
And, you know, I know that probably be really foreign to you. But, yeah, if you just say that, you can get out of a lot of things that people aren't going to, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, because you brought up two points, and I want to put the two kind of together, and that is, let's assuming that the only places you're going to eat, you're not going to go to a food stall in India, you're going to go to just the finest restaurants, the finest places, but mm-hmm. You mentioned something a little earlier, and that is eating something you don't know what it is. You know, to some people, that is an adventure. How about yourself? If you went to a fine restaurant and you ordered something with an exotic name, but you didn't know exactly what it is, would you be daring enough to eat it?
I have to say, I ask a lot of questions. You know, and I've gotten kind of like you, like the older I've gotten, I've gotten a little pickier. So I kind of want to know if there's meat in it. I'm not a big meat eater anymore. So I will, you know, I ask those questions and qualify to a certain extent, and then beyond that, you just go for it.
With all the places you've traveled, and I would assume you've had an opportunity to travel not just as a flight attendant, but you've traveled on your own as well.
Oh, yeah.
With all the places that you traveled, where is your favorite food, and what is it?
Oh, God, that is such a hard question. Well, I guess, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is Italy. I have never had a bad meal there. And, you know, I love pasta. I good bread. Anything that's high carb, I love. So I have to say, traveling for food, that has to have been my best food experience. And my worst has been, you know, where I've had to claim, have to put the vegan card out. It's probably China.
Okay. And with all your travels, when, as much as you enjoy the food from the various places you travel around the world, when you get back home, what's the first thing you want to eat?
You know what? Salad. Seriously, because when I am tired or when you feel jet lagged, I mean, the best thing for me is just greens. But I know that's probably not everybody else. I know there are people that rush to In-N-Out Burger, you know, or McDonald's or something like that, but I just crave salads. And I know that sounds really odd.
And one last tip for people who actually do fly a lot, and that is what they should and shouldn't eat when on or drink when on board a flight. And we have about a minute.
Okay. The best tip I'm going to give you is drink as much water as you can, so, you know, without, like, being crazy, because that will help you feel better, help with jet lag. It will just, you know, alleviate headaches, and, you know, it might annoy your neighbors when you have to go to the lab, but it is the very best thing. And I say enjoy your flight, have a glass of wine, just drink an extra glass of water. And bring your own food just in case they don't have what you want.
But don't. But since you're on a flight, don't bring anything like, you know, Limburger cheese sandwiches or something like that.
Oh, yeah, you might want to think about not offending your seatmates. But,
exactly.
Yeah. But definitely, I have, like, nuts and bars and everything. I always have those packed. Just in case, it's that fear of starvation, you know?
Excellent. The book is called Life, Love, and a Hijacking, My Pan Am Memoir. And people can find out more information by going to your website, which I believe is WendySueConnect.com, correct?
Exactly. Thank you so much. Yes, exactly.
Wendy, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Peter, it was a pleasure. You're a doll, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Wendy Connect, author of Life, Love, and a Hijacking, My Pan Am Memoir. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0323, and you'll find links to Wendy's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. By now, you may have heard about the woman in New York City who sued her 8-year-old nephew for $127,000 because of a broken wrist. According to court records, she fell down and broke her wrist when she arrived at the boy's birthday party, and he leaped into her arms to hug her. She says that she was told by an attorney that the best way for her to get money to pay for medical bills would be to sue the boy. Her attorney argues that the 8-year-old was negligent. However, a jury disagreed with that and took just 25 minutes to throw out the case and award the woman nothing. The jury did exactly what it was supposed to do: judge the child's behavior by how a child of similar age, intelligence, and experience is expected to behave. Let's be fair. The aunt says she loves the child, but was simply acting on the advice of a lawyer. My question is this: how did we get to the point where an attorney believes that the best choice in this situation is to sue an 8-year-old boy who was just trying to hug his aunt? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And indeed with us is Stuart Nauman, complete with tail and ears, with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stuart.
And don't forget the pipe and the pajamas and all that.
Oh, yes, the pipe and the pajamas.
And the circular bed.
And the circular bed.
Yes. You remember that music?
Yep.
Yeah, well, because that was the music to, if you remember, that was the music to Playboy's Penthouse, which was a syndicated TV show back in the late 50s that was sort of like a living embodiment of Playboy magazine. And was hosted by Hugh Hefner and had some of the great, cool musicians, writers, comedians. It was like the hip show to watch back in the late 50s, early 60s, you know. And Playboy magazine, which the show was based out of, and popular music have gone hand in hand since, the first issue came out back in December 1953. Now, the book Playboy Swings by Patty Farmer is an anecdotal history that looks at another side of Hefner's Playboy empire, in particular how the magazine helped to promote jazz music to a mainstream audience during the 50s and 60s.
And yeah, we had Patty on the program just a couple of weeks ago on the Stuff File program talking about this very book. And it sounds like it was a lot to do with basically Hef's own personal interest in the type of music that he was promoting, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, he was a jazz fan, you know, ever since he was a young boy. And basically when the magazine started, it was basically, you know, he thought were the most popular musicians that he liked and thought that, you know, the Main Street audience would like that as well. And you know what? He used the offshoots of Playboy as a chain of Playboy clubs and the two TV shows, Playboy's Penthouse and Playboy After Dark, as well as the jazz festival that it had, the Playboy Jazz Festival, to bring many of these musicians this much-needed public attention. And in a way, turned Hefner into an accidental trailblazer by promoting and accepting black and female musicians and singers into that mainstream when other clubs and TV shows were rather hesitant to do so. So, I even found out when I read this book, I thought it was pretty interesting that Playboy even had its own record label, which mainly released compilation albums of artists who were recognized by Playboy's annual Jazz Reader poll and or were live performances from past Playboy jazz festivals. Now, although Hefner took a lot of heat during the 50s, 60s, and 70s because Playboy was accused of exploiting women at a time when, at its peak 40 years ago, the magazine was selling in excess of 7 million copies a month. It was selling, you know, millions of copies. And Farmer believes that because of this strong belief of promoting racial and gender equality through the performers he promoted on the magazine, his TV shows, and the clubs, he was more popular than he's more than just a publisher. He was also an accidental catalyst for social change in the United States. Now, the book also gives an inside look at how large a role the chain of Playboy clubs played in spreading the Playboy brand during its heyday of the 60s and 70s, and how Playboy culture grew thanks to these clubs, where gentlemen could have an enjoyable evening out as an exclusive key holder by watching some of the top musical and comedy acts, enjoy a fine dinner at reasonable prices, and, of course, enjoy the spectacle of the club's trademark bunnies. And you can see comedians like Woody Allen and Lenny Bruce and also Dick Gregory and Professor Irwin Corey, who was a mainstay at the Playboy clubs for many, many years. Now, the book Playboy Swings, I thought, was a fascinating cultural history that further adds to the mystique of Playboy being a major force in contemporary pop culture in North America by building an entertainment empire that exposed its many readers to the best in popular music and comedy, as well as being a place to launch a show business career and become an unintentional spark for social causes that would forever change modern society. Basically, it shows that there was more to Playboy than just a centerfold.
And nobody has a staple in their navel in this book, right?
Not that I can see. a lot of bunny ears and tails, but no staples. Sorry.
So the book again is?
It's called Playboy Swings by Patty Farmer. It's published by Beaufort Books, and it's $32.
And is there anything else, since you talked about Playboy Swings, is there anything else in that genre that you can compare to it or recommend?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of countless biographies of Hefner and the history of Playboy itself, but there were three books that came out about 20 years ago if you remember, Peter, very well, there was a publisher, General Publishing Group.
Right.
That published a lot of entertainment and pop culture books. And they did three hard-covered coffee table books, one called the Playboy book, which was a history and illustrated history of the magazine, one called the Playmate book, which was looking at every single Playboy Playmate from 1953 to 1996, and Inside the Playboy Mansion, which was an inside look at both the Chicago and L.A. mansions. And these were great illustrated volumes that gave a very complete history of Playboy the magazine and Playboy the pop culture phenomenon. And they were beautifully produced hardcover coffee table books. And maybe one day someone will buy the rights to these books and maybe put them out as reissue them or put them out as a boxed edition. They were really terrific books to explain Hugh Hefner and the Playboy Empire.
And there's something else you're forgetting.
What's that?
There was also a book that came out many, many years ago. As you know, the old joke is, especially nowadays when they're talking about the fact that they're no longer going to have nude women in their Playboy magazine, so now people can't use the old joke, I just read it for the articles. You remember there was a book that was published that had some of the best Playboy articles, just the articles in hardcover form.
Oh, that's right. And also there were a couple of collections of some of the best Playboy interviews, too, that came out, about two or three volumes worth.
Exactly. And those are great books because I used to read them for the articles.
And also, Playboy, thanks to the Playboy. If it wasn't for the Playboy interviews, Alex Haley would not be so well known.
There you go. There you go. Anyway, sir. So, this week's book is, again?
Well, as I puff on my pipe, turn around in the circular bed here. It's called Playboy Swings by Patty Farmer, published by Beaufort Books. And it's only $32.
And how can people find you, sir?
Well, if I'm not at the mansion, you can find me in the Montreal Times every week, in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
You're welcome, Peter. And now I must go back to the grotto. The bunnies are waiting.
Okay. Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments. But I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And I guess you can call this one the not ready for prime time criminals. It was at 7:30 a.m. on October the 8th that, according to Dallas police, 18-year-old Christopher Jones and a buddy decided it would be Joy's Donut Shop that they should rob. As they exited the store, one of them actually carrying the shop's cash register, a uniformed off-duty officer who apparently had pulled up to the store for donuts saw the whole thing and arrested Jones, though his partner was able to flee. I'm assuming he had to drop the cash register, though. Okay, not to play up on a stereotype, if you're going to attempt one of your first robberies in life, perhaps you should do a bit of homework and minimize the chances of coming into contact with the cops by not picking a donut shop at around the time of police shift changes. I mean, that's just common sense. I almost made these clowns the idiot of the day, but I did not. Because coming up next, boys and girls, this is your idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A young man who thought he could make some fast money by indulging in kidnapping has been arrested by the police from the Delta State Command in Nigeria after he left a ransom note with his phone number boldly written on it at the scene of the crime. The suspect, Samson Elelegwu from Agbor, had kidnapped a young girl from her house and left a note for her parents on how to pay him the ransom, giving them all the details, including his phone number. The parents of the girl handed the note over to the police, who called the amateur abductor and gave him instructions on where to go to pick up the ransom, and he walked directly into the hands of authorities because, basically, they tracked him by his phone. Yes. Maybe this guy should have resorted to traditional Nigerian phone scams. I mean, why would you leave your own phone number as a contact at the scene of a kidnapping and use your phone as a way to handle ransom negotiations? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0323. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0323. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air online. Or as a download, we're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.